Postal Service moving to open source software. It's a subject that we've talked about a number of times on this program and on some of our other shows here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And I'm pleased to welcome John Byrne, who's manager of the Integrated Business Solutions Service Center at the Postal Service, to talk about it. Mr. Byrne, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining me.
Hello, Francis. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I guess we'll just start at the beginning. What was it that prompted you to want to look at open source software as a solution? What was the issue that you needed a solution to? And then we'll go from there.
Well, it all started with our product tracking system. And if you've ever used USPS.com, you're familiar with it. You may have tracked a shipment or a letter. And that system, the business customers are wanting to grow more and more transactions and add more event scans as it goes through the mail processing equipment. So with that demand, even though mail volume is declining a little bit, they wanted to add more and more scan events. So what we needed to be able to do is lower the cost of processing those scans at the same time enabling the business to grow.
All right. And so the approach to that, how were you doing it before this move?
It's been 15 years ago. It was originally developed on the mainframe, and over the years we've enhanced it and added features to it, and it's been running primarily on the mainframe. But we wanted to look at a way of growing the technology with and reducing the cost at the same time.
And so did you have other choices other than doing it the way that you did it, moving to the open source system, what was your decision process?
Well, we brought in some vendors last year, and we met with them and talked about different ways that we could lower our costs and enable the processing to grow. And after evaluating various options, we decided the best way would be to try to reuse the business intelligence that we've built into the application over the last 15 years. Primarily, it's the cost.
As you went through this decision-making process, what led you to open source as the final solution?
It's a cost perspective. Well, the open source enables you to treat the hardware as a commodity and able to take your applications and move them from hardware to hardware without having to redo the applications. And that's a cost advantage. It treats, as I said, the hardware as a commodity, so you can evaluate various hardware vendors and buy the most cost-effective solution.
So, John, this is Karen. One of the things that in my old days of OMB, when we started talking to agencies about this, was actually total cost of ownership. And in looking at your environment, is this like the next logical progression? Because it's all Unix-based, what you had, Linux-based types of things. So costs such as retraining or hiring people didn't really matter because you already had the expertise in this operating system.
Well, we're actually moving both from the mainframe operating system as well as the Unix operating system to the Linux. And as you mentioned, the Linux operating system is very familiar with the Unix, so there's not a lot of training that goes on there.
So those types of costs, when people say, well, I want to move to open source and it's free, when if OMB were to come back in and ask you, you would say, well, gosh, my people are already trained or they're experts or the transition costs would be minimum because of the staff that you have, or are you going to still have to staff up to deal with this different type of environment?
We're basically retooling our people. So I wouldn't say that the open source is free. I would say it's a much lower cost.
And this is kind of the same thing. Karen and I were talking before you came on the air, John, about the issue of the State Department, an employee there asking Secretary Clinton why they couldn't use Firefox because it's free. And the response from Undersecretary Kennedy was, it's not really free. There's a cost associated with it. And so it strikes me that this is the same kind of thing where the costs are significantly reduced, but there still is a cost awareness.
Absolutely.
All right. My guest is John Byrne, manager of the Integrated Business Solutions Services Center at the Postal Service, talking about their switch to open source. And we'll continue our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment.
The Data Center Minute is provided by Symantec and Carahsoft.
A recent State of the Data Center report found that storage needs are growing fastest for email, collaborative data, and file archiving. With unstructured information consuming a large percentage of an organization's storage, it's important to classify data, including information from messaging, file servers, and collaborative systems, onto different tiers of cost-effective storage and into an archive. Archiving is critical to storage tiering practice, allowing you to move less frequently used information to lower-cost storage while maintaining accessibility. Symantec's archiving solution solutions automate retention and storage of emails, files, instant messages, and other unstructured content in accordance with your IT policies. This helps reduce your data footprint, improve performance and scalability, green your IT through reduced server count, and increase end-user productivity through transparent access to archive files.
Symantec is data center optimization. Learn more at thedatacenterminute.com.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
There's a big problem with the way all websites are named. The protocol was never designed with security in mind. Here's Doug Montgomery of the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Basic protocol exchanges of the DNS provide no security mechanisms. There's lots of ad hoc techniques people use to protect servers, but these are sort of patching symptoms of what is a systemic problem, is that the protocol itself doesn't provide any security mechanisms.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabek with a peek at what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. There's been some controversy around the $9.5 million contract for recovery.gov. Today we'll hear from GSA, which handled that procurement, and the Senior Executive Service is looking for your insights. We'll tell you more. And yesterday we told you about NIH working with Wikipedia. Today we'll hear from the team from Wikimedia. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabek and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On In Depth with Francis Rose, my guest in studio today is Karen Evans, and my guest on the phone for this part of the show is John Byrne, manager of the Integrated Business Solutions Service Center at the Postal Service. And, Mr. Byrne, how long did this process take to move from the legacy system to the open source?
So we started last summer, and we started evaluating different options, and by before the holiday season, by before Thanksgiving, we were actually running some transactions on the Linux environment. But we put it on hold for the month of December, and then we picked it back up again in January and implemented it in January and February. One of the nice advantages to the way we did it was there was never a knife-edge cutover. We were able to implement piece at a time, and in some cases we had to roll it back to make a change, and then we move forward again. So we were able to phase it in, and actually, no, anyone that used the website didn't even notice.
Was the hold in December just was it an issue on the back end, or was it just because that's your heaviest use time of the year?
It's the busy holiday season, and we wanted just to make sure that we didn't impact any production operations during that time.
Sure, fair enough. Did you run into any issues as far as your person? You talked a little bit to Karen in the first segment about retooling your people. Did you run into any issues with that, with skills that your people needed that they were still in the process of getting while you're trying to ramp the system up?
No, the same developers that developed on the mainframe in COBOL are now developing in COBOL on Linux environment. So they were able to redeploy their skills in various ways to using the new technology.
So one of the questions that I have in looking at this, because several of the articles I read said like you had 1,300 servers previously and those types of things, and now you've converted over. Are you running both environments, and or how did you do? Did you retool the existing equipment that you have to run the new environments?
I think there's a mixture of two different projects. One project is the mainframe piece, and moving that over to the Linux environment. But there's also the Unix piece, and we're also taking those Unix servers, the ones that are getting older, and as we do tech refresh, and we're moving those over to the Linux environment as well. Now, what we've done is we've selected the Linux operating system because that enables us to run both on the mainframe and also on the distributed environment. So we're able to reuse our skills from one environment to the other.
So when I go to the local post office, because I do this a lot, and I go there and they have those little Unisys, you know, those little monitors that then figure out what's the fastest way, zip code wise to go, are those just still, are those going to be dumb terminals, or are you going to take all those out, or you can reuse all that and you're just redoing the back end?
Yeah, we're just doing the server part.
Oh, okay.
Not the front end.
Oh, well, see, now I'm sure OMB would love that because you're reusing all of the existing types of equipment that they have. So as far as post office users and things are concerned, they're not going to see anything other than system improvement.
Yeah, this was a transparent cutover. The only thing that this did was lowered our cost and enabled us to have the capability to grow without increasing our cost.
And so then the question that I believe is obvious here is, why doesn't everybody do this? And I know that's not a question for you necessarily to answer, Mr. Byrne. That's not fair. But, I mean, is there anything in your experience that would prevent either this being deployed more widely at the Postal Service, or maybe you're already working on that, or is there anything that wouldn't be duplicatable about the way you did this?
I mean, this is our strategy, and, you know, we're planning, even in our FY10 budgets, we're putting money aside to do more of this. We're going to move more and more workload over to the Linux environment. So that is our strategy.
So one of the questions that I have is, you start talking about the reduction in the overall operating costs. When you pitch this and you go in, are you tracking the actual reduction of those costs so that you can then, for example, congressional oversight is talking to the Postmaster General about why you have to raise your rates and close on a Saturday and go to 5-day delivery. Is this going to translate into helping absorb some of those types of increasing costs so that you don't have to raise postal rates?
We put business cases together that justify our expenses, mm-hmm. and it's on a cost avoidance basis or a cost reduction basis.
So this is a cost avoidance?
It's both.
It's both?
Cost reduction and cost avoidance.
Okay. Okay.
Because normally this time of year we would be adding mainframe capacity in expectation of the holiday season, and this year we're deferring that expenditure.
Okay, so it's true cost avoidance, which is, it's kind of sad because that doesn't score as far as CBO, Congressional Budget Office.
But it should.
It should, but it doesn't. It's an efficiency. It's a cost. And so because he's doing his job better, he doesn't necessarily get credit budget-wise, which is always a little frustrating, isn't it, John?
It strikes me that it's better if you never spend the money in the first place, rather than spending money but not as much as expected or budgeted. That's better.
Well, this is logical. It's logical.
Am I missing something, Karen?
Okay, John, you take a shot at it.
Well, we also have projects that lower our costs as well. So as our contracts come up, we look for more creative ways to have a better contract going forward, and that actually does reduce our operating expenses.
Well, the program is fascinating to me because it seems any time that someone is able to accomplish what it looks like you've accomplished, John, which is to do something that should be able to be tied up into a bow and replicated other places, I think that's a good thing, and I'm glad to see that you're getting some recognition for it. I have a couple more questions for you about what you've done, and we'll bring those up when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is John Byrne, manager of the Integrated Business Solutions Service Center at the U.S. Postal Service on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, get ready for Saturday. It's a doubleheader. This United update brought to you by Volkswagen, presenting partner of DC United this Saturday, RFK Stadium. It all starts at 5 with a Washington Freedom game, and then DC United takes on Colorado. The match brought to you by U.S. Soccer Foundation and Pepsi. And you have to ask about the family four-pack. It's 4 tickets, 2 hot dogs, 2 orders of chicken tenders, 4 small orders of fries, 1 bag of peanuts, you kidding me, and 4 sodas. All this for only $96. For tickets, 202-587-5000 or dcunited.com.
Every good football coach knows that success on the field starts with a good game plan beforehand. At Zell Law, we know the value of a good business plan. Our attorneys have extensive experience in mergers and acquisitions, private equity and executive compensation, as well as negotiations for small and medium-sized businesses. If you're starting a business or planning to sell, your first play should be to call Zell Law. Visit us on the web at zelllaw.com. Zell Law, dedicated to helping our clients realize their personal dreams of wealth and freedom.
Verizon presents a small business worst-case scenario. Struggling to save money, your small business subleases space to the Super Head Shrinkers rock band.
Hey, guys. Can you keep it down?
Sure.
Perfect. Thank you.
Best-case solution, Verizon high-speed internet and phone for business.
Call 1-888-745-7222 for a dedicated high-speed connection from our office to yours, so you won't be slowed down just because your neighbors are online. Up to 7 megs for qualified customers for just $79.99 a month for 12 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get unlimited nationwide calling, 24/7 tech support, and our advanced internet security features, all backed by the reliability of the Verizon network. Call 1-888-745-7222 today. For just $79.99 a month for 12 months, you'll receive over $180 back and available online rebates when you get the Verizon Single Line Business Pack and Data Protection Pack, one of the many tools in the Verizon Small Business Toolbox. Offer for new broadband customers. Offer services and speed not available everywhere. Early termination fees, taxes, and other terms apply. Offer ends 9/18/09.
This week on Meet the Innovators, brought to you by Google, the second part of our interview with Vint Cerf, the father of the Internet.
If you talk to Vivek Kundra, the CIO at OMB, you'll find that he and Anish Chopra, the CTO, are very vocal and very articulate about openness and transparency, as is the president. It seems to me that this is the essence of a democratic environment. So I'm quite hopeful that this administration will find ways to leverage the network to the benefit of the citizens of the United States.
There's been a lot of talk about Google for Government. What does this mean for your agency? Google offers innovative tools to help government make information more accessible, both to authorized employees and to the public. Visit google.com/federal to learn how easy-to-use Google products can help your employees work together, improving agency performance while reducing costs. Do more with less. Learn how at google.com/federal.
If you like good food and good drink, if you think a meal is more than just something to eat, but a real celebration for the taste buds, if you want to know the backstory about who is preparing your food when you dine out, then you should join me, Nikki Nellis.
And me, David Nellis, every Sunday for Dishing It Out. We'll talk about how to eat locally and who's helping you do that, how to taste wine, what you can prepare in your own kitchen that the hottest chefs are serving right now, and more.
If you love food, this show is for you. Dishing It Out, Sundays at 11 a.m. on 1500 a.m.
and 820 a.m.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking to John Byrne, manager of the Integrated Business Solutions Service Center at the Postal Service, about their transition to open source for tracking their tracking packages. If you want to go in and enter the delivery confirmation number for a package that you sent, this is the system that they're transitioning. You talked to, in the last segment, John, about the fact that you're going to be looking at this. This is a part of your strategy, so you'll be doing this with other parts of your business. Any ones in particular that you can talk about?
We have a variety of different systems, and we look at it based upon the cost-benefit analysis. So systems that use up a lot of mainframe capacity, we're looking at those and targeting those and moving and planning to move those over next year, as well as the ones that are in the need of a tech refresh, perhaps because they're several years old and the hardware is getting a bit expensive to maintain. So we're targeting it based on the need of the applications.
Now, I imagine, speaking of hardware, that your previous vendor, Sun, was a little bit disappointed with your decision to move to HP for your Linux system.
Well, we still have 1,300 Sun servers out there, and we rely on Sun for maintenance on those servers. So we're continuing the maintenance of those servers until we migrate them completely.
And so when is the sunset date for that? Because this was a classic example of some of the stuff that Francis and I were talking about offline, about when you try to really talk to the powers to be about cost savings, you don't actually realize those for a few years until you can retire the legacy equipment or retire them. So what you're saying, did you bring this in? Is it taken into consideration with tech refresh? So you're considering that a tech refresh?
Yes, we're tech refreshing to the Linux platform, and we're doing it over the next several years.
So several years, a lot of people always want to know what does several years mean in government speak. Like, the, you know, the average is 3 to 5. Is several years for you 3, 10?
It's based on 3 years, but we're doing it, as I said, on priority order. So we have some systems we're doing this year, and we're doing it this year because the systems are 4 or 5 years old. They haven't had the maintenance, and they're getting expensive, and they're obsolete hardware. So we're migrating those over, and as I said earlier, we're doing it based on priority order, based on failure rates, based on perhaps the customer's workload has increased and the capacity is no longer available. And then what we're doing is we're freeing up some of that older hardware and reusing it for some of the other systems so that we can keep them alive for a few more years as well.
If I am your counterpart at another agency and I'm listening to this description and I'm saying this makes a lot of sense and I want to try to apply the techniques that John used to move something in my shop, what would you say to somebody in that situation? What did you learn by doing this that you didn't expect at the beginning or challenges that you ran across, anything like that?
Well, you know, there's always unexpected things. What I would say is that the advantage to this approach is it's a low-risk approach, and we're able to do it layer at a time. The product tracking system is still not completely moved over. We moved a big portion of the COBOL portion over to the Linux environment. There's other pieces that we're working on right now. So over time, I like this approach because it's not a knife-edge cutover. We've reduced the risk to the business, and a lot of projects that try to rewrite the application, there's so much risk involved. So I like the approach of taking it layer at a time and moving it over in a strategic fashion.
So, John, I have one other last question, which a lot of people are looking at now. When you did this conversion, the whole idea of green IT, did you by any chance measure power consumption, and are you going to reduce your power consumption by moving to this new environment? Is there any kind of consideration to that?
Absolutely. This is definitely a much more, we're taking advantage of the virtualization environment, and we're able to get much more utilization out of the existing servers, as well as the newer servers are much more efficient than the ones that are 3 or 4 years old.